Welcome to the IRIS podcast. Today's edition comes from the Perth and Kinross Council Personalisation event, February 16th, 2011. In this talk, Nick Andrews, Planning Officer for Older People at Swansea Council, gives the Welsh perspective on personalisation.
I've got to say, it's a bit scary this, because probably in Wales, the only equivalent of this building is our Millennium Centre in Cardiff. So if I get my tongue a bit tied and look a bit nervous, that's probably why. So I'm always like to say thanks ever so much for asking for a Welsh perspective, because you don't get asked for a Welsh perspective that often. But I also feel a bit of a fraud when people say, what's the Welsh perspective? Because a lot of the stuff we've been doing in Swansea, and when I worked in Powys, which is a big rural authority in Wales, is based on a lot of work that's going on in Scotland. And, for example, is the work that Don Williamson's doing in around the Shortbait Bureau stuff you're doing up here, around respite and options, fantastic bit of work. And Alan Barr at the Scottish Centre for Community Development, some fantastic work about how you build community capacity and get a common vision. Emma Miller and all the Talking Points crowd in the Joint Improvement Team. And finally, Angela Henderson and the local area coordination work that you do. So a lot of the stuff you see here, we've pinched from Scotland, really. So apologies for that. Yeah. But we do always reference Scotland. And we have had people from Scotland come down to Cardiff. So that's really good. Okay. And I'll be pulled off with a sheep's crook if I run out of time. So I wanted to start with a cartoon. And people know this film. Do you know the film?
Yes.
A Close Shave. Wallace and Gromit, and I love the Close Shave, don't you? Because this is a lovely story, and it's basically there's this lady, Wendoline, who runs a wool shop, and she's got this dog called Preston, who was designed to gather up the sheep, round the sheep up, so you could get the wool to make wool for her wool shop. It's fantastic, but it all goes terribly wrong, doesn't it, in the film? And Preston malfunctions, really, and he ends up rounding up sheep and turning them into dog meat. And in the middle of the... if I can get this right... There's this lovely quote, isn't there, from Wendoline, Daddy created him for good, but he's turned out evil. And we say in Swansea, this is social services. And when I show this slide to service users or to carers or to staff, they'll say, it is, isn't it, really? We've got it all terribly, terribly wrong. And there's a guy who was an expert in business. He's actually a visiting professor at the University of Cardiff called John Seddon. He's a bit outspoken guy, but he had a sort of look at adult social care, and I've got a quote from him. Firstly, before I go on, we don't want to say we're cynical, because that's the important thing, isn't it? There's a difference between being truthful and being cynical. And Carl Rogers, I love that quote, the facts are friendly. So in all this hot air or rhetoric sometimes around personalisation, we've got to ground it in the reality, really. And it's not because we're being cynical, but we've just got to be real, really. And this is a quote from John Seddon about adult social care. Like the police service, adult social care is designed as a bureaucracy to feed the regime, not a service to meet older people's needs. The regime constrains methods. It's a bureaucracy of call centres, functional specialisation, activity targets, budget management, form filling and counting, designed according to the requirements of the regime. And the bureaucracy is cemented with information technology, all of which has been designed from the point of view of electronic data management and reporting, not solving people's problems. It's quite a damning sort of statement, isn't it? But again, when I share that, a lot of people say, it is a bit like that. Well, it is a lot like that, really. So I think we need to hear people, and we need to hear, you know, to be real about where we're at. And when we look, actually, in Swansea, we looked at some of the research. There's a lot of research about what matters to older people. You don't need to reinvent the wheel, really, and have a look in the literature. And this is a quote from Jill Manthorpe, who's a professor in older people's work, and is really concerned about some of the stuff that's going on in social care. And this here is a quote, building a relationship is often sacrificed under the pressure to undertake assessments and care plan more speedily. This is despite the evidence that the time and sensitivity required to build a relationship and almost always is always a prerequisite to understanding assessment with all but the most well-informed. And this comes up time and time again. We've gone mad on process and forms. So you end up with social workers spending more time in the office than they do out in the community. And that leads on to the experience of staff, doesn't it? Because in Wales, we had an independent review of adult social care, which was good, and it talked about the burden of assessment. Isn't that terrible? People come into the job to make a difference, and they've got the burden of assessment sort of laid upon them. Here's a quote from Community Care. 1,000 social workers working across children and adult services revealed that 1 in 4 is actively thinking about leaving the profession. The single thing most likely to persuade them to change their minds is less paperwork and more client contact. Brilliant. And we like this little quote because our colleagues, our social workers, say this is after they've had training in our wonderful Paris IT system, how to fill in all the tick box drop down care plans that we've got in Swansea. And that, in a nutshell, is how the programme works. So but again, it's just been real about the sort of system. Although it was interesting, wasn't it? There was a programme, a panorama programme about child protection. I don't know if you saw it in Sussex, I think it was. And it was a bit worrying, really, because there's one social worker there who said, actually, it's quite nice being in the office at the computer with a cup of tea, rather than going in those grubby houses with all the, you know, with all these problem families. And that's a worry, isn't it? What have we done that we actually make it more comfortable for us to have to be sat in an office filling in stuff on a computer? So I think it's really an opportunity, isn't it? And I think it's fantastic to hear Sam, and you know, really inspiring and encouraging. But the important thing is, you know, we've got to get it right this time, haven't we? And I think back, because I know from my early experience, I was a community-based social worker in Mid Wales, you know, at the introduction of the NHS and Community Care Act, and all those needs-led assessments, you know, was going to be the cornerstone of high-quality care. But all the research, again, says we got it all terribly wrong, really. There's some fantastic stuff in the Griffiths report and everything, but basically we didn't do the right things. We focused on forms, we focused on the market and gatekeeping, and then when FACS came along, for access to care, whatever, it just compounded it all, and so we've got what we've got. And one of the questions is, do self-funders get a better deal? And I don't know what the experience is up here, but we find not really in Wales. They often usually pay more for the same. So now this is just the one. I mean, it's interesting to hear Sam talk about a resource allocation system that's short and sweet. Because when we looked over to England, the thing in Wales that we were a bit suspicious of, and we still are a bit suspicious of, is this resource allocation system. And looking at some of the, we've got a quote here from a survey that was in Community Care last year. It said, the results identified a number of possible reasons for the downturn in support for personalisation. 2/3 of practitioners said they'd faced increased bureaucracy as a result of the agenda, while a similar proportion said they did not have enough time with service users to support self-assessment, a key plank of personalisation. And that was one of our worries. When we looked at some of the RAS, or the resource allocation systems, and we've been looking at one in West Sussex, it's 69 very closed questions. And they're really tedious, really. And the staff say, it's okay in the drop-down, you think it's simple, but it takes ages doing this on the computer, and it's really, we don't like it, really. And there's also this worry that the idea that points make prizes, when people's lives are so complicated, is that we might over-allocate resource or under-allocate resource. And in the current financial climate, obviously, the under-allocation of resource is a real issue. And it gets back to this idea, is what is, you know, rationing? Is rationing a science or an art? And this is going right back to Lipsky in 1980. Street-level bureaucrats, e.g. social workers, have discretion because the nature of service provision calls for human judgment that cannot be programmed and for which machines cannot substitute. It is the nature of what we call human services that the unique aspects of people and their situations will be apprehended by public service workers and translated into courses of action responsive to each case within more or less broad limits imposed by their agency. So we really are worried that, you know, that you get another mechanistic and it becomes yet another sort of detailed facts. When we had facts in Wales, we had this severity, likelihood, critical, substantial, moderate, and each subdomain of each, you know, it just became a bit of a nightmare. And we're worried that we might make the same mistakes this time with personalization. And we go back to this lovely little quote from Einstein, I think, is not everything that can be counted counts, and not everything that counts can be counted. Simple statement, that's really important in this personalization agenda, we think. And one of the, and again, a professor of community care law in Cardiff University, Luke Clements, he's one of my heroes, always has been one of my heroes, even when I worked for Powys, and he used to take our local authority to court, really, because we were doing things badly. But he's a really principled lawyer, he's fantastic. But he's got some concerns about the personalization agenda in England, really, and here's a quote from him. He thinks very much the equity is envisaged in new right monetarist terms, that its assessment is essentially a financial accounting exercise. Such an approach would appear to be unsatisfactory in terms of outcomes for many community care service users, where equity should presumably be measured in terms of the quality and effectiveness of the support that is provided and whether it achieves the desired outcomes of the individual rather than its cost. And we find this in Swansea. We've been doing a lot of work with community development and seeing what's in the community and seeing how we can enrich people's lives, add value to sort of commission services. And we're finding it's a lot easier in the rich areas, really, where there's lots of activities going on. And in the poor areas of Swansea, you're going to have to spend more money, really, to achieve the same outcomes for people. And the danger, when we've looked at some of the resource allocation systems, is that the people come out the same, really. It doesn't pick up those subtleties, the fact that you live in an enriched community or you live in an impoverished community, and we're really worried about that because we think one of the key areas of social justice, really, isn't it, in social practice, is that we if we're biased towards anybody, we're biased towards the weak and the disadvantaged. And this is the other thing that we're worried about, and again, perhaps some directors in England like the RAS, and we've seen some evidence that the RAS, resource allocation system, it sounds nice and tidy because you can put a sort of financial lid on what you spend on people, really. And there's this question, is it around user choice or budget control, really? Because if it's around user choice, that's fantastic, isn't it? And as social workers, we should be championing that. But if it's about budget control, there's a place for budget control, and that's really important. But we've got to, again, be honest about all this. And this is Pete Beresford, again, who is a champion of the user, and he's a voice of users and carers. And he was very cautious, really, about some of the stuff in the early days. He says, the personalization agenda carries the danger of just passing on to disabled people the requirement and responsibility to be the restrictors of their own ambitions. These are just, you know, so we're not wanting to be negative, but we just want to say, just look at some of these issues and let's make sure we go forward carefully on this. So, learning from Lord of the Rings. Now, this is just getting back to what we feel, and it's strongly in Wales, because we're largely a socialist country and a strong history of the sort of cooperative movement and reciprocity and shared values and everything. I want to go back to some of that, really, and hopefully I think some of that we share more commonly with Scotland than perhaps we do with England. So here's a quote from Lord of the Rings. Much that was is lost, for none lived who could remember it. Some things that should not have been forgotten were lost. History became legend, and legend became myth. So I wanted to share just quickly two Welsh legends. Both, what I'd say, are a little nonconformist. The first, do people know what the first picture? Yeah, I hope so. Ivor the Engine. That's it, from the top left-hand corner of Wales. He's one of our heroes in Wales. I love Ivor, don't you? Because he's a bit of a nonconformist, really. He actually loves people, and he likes making tea in his boiler, and he likes singing with the Grumbling District male voice choir. And he's got his sort of counterpart, he's Di Station, who's a bit of a... He likes the rules and the regulations, and rules are rules, and you must follow them, really. And Di tends to sort of fall out sometimes with Ivor, because Ivor sort of goes where the heart is, rather than necessarily where the policy and procedure suggests he should go. And we think there's something lovely about Ivor that we need to recapture. And the guy next to Ivor, he's a Dr. Davis, who was, when I worked in this little town in Mid Wales, he was the GP there in this little town, and he was loved really by the people in that town. He was just there for people, whatever, and he thought outside the box, and he would do things that necessarily doctors don't do, because that was the sort of person he is. And I've got a quote from a book. When he died about 18 months ago, the church was packed, and people were all in you couldn't get enough people into the church when he died. And all the people in town so valued this man that they put together a book about his life and little anecdotal stories, and this is one. While playing with a sister, our small daughter fell awkwardly and dislocated her elbow. It was not long before Dr. Davis arrived at the home. In no time, the elbow had been corrected, accompanied by a sharp cry of pain. He told the girl the best kind of treatment for this sort of problem was an ice cream poultice applied internally. With that diagnosis, he disappeared to the village shop and was soon back with a prescription in hand. Having helped himself to spoons from the kitchen, he sat down with all of us and shared the ice cream. That, to us in a nutshell, is at the heart of personalization. That's what we've got to get back to somehow. We can't, and GPs are saying the system we work in now doesn't allow us to operate like that, but there's something in that spirit of personalization that we've got to get back. You know, and that's where the danger is. If we rely on a process rather than people and hearts and minds, we've got to be careful. And I think a good example to illustrate this is the expenses scandal, isn't it, and what's happened with the MPs. And this is Jonathan Aitken. And he was talking on Radio 4's Today programme in 2009, and he had this lovely quote. He said, what's happened is compliance has replaced conscience. So the MPs weren't doing anything wrong. They were following the rules, most of them. Obviously, some of them weren't because they're in prison now. But a lot of them were following the guidelines, but they weren't acting in the spirit of what it is to be an MP. And the danger is, we think, in social services and in health, and you saw the terrible article, didn't we, about what's going on in hospitals and older people. It's really worrying, isn't it? Yeah, we've spent so much time designing forms, devising insurance quality standards, a raft of stuff to improve things, but we're not working with the hearts and minds of the people who are delivering services. And that's where we think personalization is fundamentally about. It's getting back to hearts and minds. And I've got this picture here. This lovely person with the large nose and the moustache is Leslie Benham, And she's, again, one of the heroes who's been working with us in Swansea. She runs a dementia day hospital in Weymouth, down in England. And she comes up in her holidays to run training for us. And she's transformed this dementia day hospital down in Weymouth. No extra money from the NHS, purely because she loves people, really. She loves the staff and she loves the people who come to the hospital. She does car boot sales to raise funds to stock the place. And she uses drama and all sorts of things to motivate her staff and make them feel good about what they're doing. She came up to Powys when I was there, and on the day that she came up, it was when Gordon Brown came to power, and again, there was another, Giles Fraser was speaking on Radio 4, and he had this quote, which again, I think is really powerful. "The most important crucible of transformation is the human heart. Without this, all the new initiatives that come from government are bound to fail. Deep change only ever takes place when people decide to do things different, when they experience some sort of conversion, really." And again, we think fundamentally, this is what personalization is about. We've got to somehow get back to the heart, and it isn't all about the process. And again, if you look at the research, we wanted to base a lot of our work on evidence-based practice, so we did a lot of work, and some folk at Swansea University and at Sheffield University actually helped us on this. We looked at a lot of the research, what matters to older people or not service users generally. This is a lovely paper by Peter Beresford. It's around palliative social care, and it's a fantastic paper because he goes back to the true heart of what it is to be a social worker, really. And one of his comments is, "Whatever happened to friendship in health and social care?" Here's the quote. "And the social worker came and, you know, talked to the kids about it that evening. And when my dad died and my oldest son was in a terrible state, she came that night as well at 9 o'clock. So pretty impressive support, really. And I'm sure she would do that for everyone. That's the person she is." So that's the thing, isn't it? It's not. And the next quote is from David Sherd. And he loves it. He says it's not about not doing person-centered care. It's about being person-centered. And he says if you get people who are person-centered, then they will deliver person-centered care. Don't think you train people on person-centered care. Help them to become person-centered. And this is a quote from David Sherd. I don't know if you saw Can Joe Robson Fix Dementia Care? A series of programs about the terrible state of nursing care for people with dementia across the UK, really. And David was one of the pioneers in that program. He showed there's a different way of doing residential care. And he's been working with us in Swansea on developing, and again, I'd say personalisation in care homes. It's brilliant, and I agree with Sam, and it's very much about, with people with dementia, that you can support them as much as you can at home, and we're doing some work around assistive technology and more flexible ways of providing domiciliary care. But essentially, there are a lot of people will end up in a care setting, and we've got to get that right. And in Swansea, we spend 40% of our budget on care homes. It was almost at the start of the personalisation agenda. We didn't bother with care homes. You know, thought it was. But actually, getting it right in care homes is fundamentally important, and some of the people in our care homes are the most vulnerable and the most disempowered people that we work with. This is a quote from David. "As an organisation, becoming person-centred is about creating a culture where the service brings out the best in the individual staff and those receiving the service." See, the emphasis is on the staff again. And a lot of the stuff I'm worried about is we're all saying, yes, outcomes for service users, outcomes for carers. But unless we get our staff right, unless we nurture and look after our staff, we're not going to get it. Yeah. So it talks about involving people living and working together in a feeling-based service, almost like a family or community. And one home, and again, we've got a home in Swansea, they've done a lot of work with David, and it's fantastic. The staff say now, it's not like coming into work. And actually, it's quite hard some days to tell who are the residents and who are the staff. They got rid of uniforms, they eat together, they have a totally different sort of culture. They got away from the old hotel model, we call it, of care home provision. So, again, Kit Wood's one of my heroes of dementia care. Being present entails letting go of that obsession with doing, which often damages care work, and having a greater capacity simply for being. And as David Sherd says, we spend our lives as human beings, not human doings. Really important little quotes. Interestingly related, when we talk to staff about this, they're really worried about some of this. And this is a quote from Community Care last August. "Will social workers lose their touch?" And it was about childcare social workers actually worried about comforting children when they're upset because they'd be abused, they'd be accused of grooming them for abuse. And funnily, when we've been taking this person-centred approach to our care providers, domiciliary care, day services, care homes for older people, they're saying, actually, we're worried about comforting people because we've been told, you know, we could be grooming them for abuse. And it's almost like a hands-off. And some of the staff said, and this is terrible, when the social workers come, they've come to poverise us. I'd never heard this word. I thought, what's poverise? And it's basically the social workers come in to see what you're doing wrong, really, and they're going to catch you out. And so everyone's a bit on tenterhooks. And a really upsetting thing to me, they said, we've had lots of povers because people are falling in the care home, so we make sure they sit in the chair now, really. And they've got these assistive technology to say when somebody gets out of a chair, and the minute they do, they sit them back down again. So you can have people who are safe, but they're dying of boredom in care homes, really, isn't it? And the other thing is this emotional detachment, you know, that you can't touch or hold somebody. So we had a whole thing in Swansea. A cultural shift for us was we had to call it a kutch policy. Does anyone know the word kutch? Kutch is a Welsh word for a, you know, it's like a kutch. It doesn't translate sort of directly into English, but it's basically around. And interestingly, it means a safe place, creating a safe place for someone. Often in Wales, it's used to give someone a hug when they're upset, really. So we've developed in Swansea what we call a kutch policy, which is giving a clear guidance to staff about when it's right, the appropriate use of emotional and touch and everything. Really important things, because this was a little thing that was really undermining our personalisation agenda, because people were worried about doing the very things that make the service person-centred. The other hero of mine is Munro, and presumably people have been looking at the Munro Review of Child Protection. There's some fantastic stuff coming out of that review. She's a systems thinker, and I've got a few quotes from her which are fantastic. Compliance with rules and regulations derive professional practice more than sound judgment. A lot of data is collected which describes performance, but not what matters. I mean, it's just terrible, isn't it? Performance and inspection systems do not adequately examine the quality of direct work with children and young people or impact. And we found that. We're getting back to this with your talking point stuff about the conversation, about the experience of assessment, rather than how many pages have been filled in on a form and shipped off somewhere. Social workers spend too much time completing documentation, and the assessment framework is inefficient and does not easily facilitate professional judgments about risk. When we look at this, a lot of this in Wales, anyway, is transferable to adult services. Now, the Altogether Married Project, how many have we got? We've got about 10 minutes? 5 minutes. Oh, no. Right. There's a paper which hopefully summarises a lot of this, but basically we did a project with the SSIA, which is a bit like at your JIT. It's a social service improvement agency, collaborative, relationship-centred. A big thing for us, again, for this personalisation agenda is not the assessment focus all there. It's across the purchase of pride of divide. The biggest success we had was the fact that we got social workers who didn't trust dom care providers, who thought the people who work in care homes were from I don't know where, got them together, and they co-produced different ways of doing things. So we got service users together with providers, with social workers, with carers, and created something different, really. And we built on people's strengths and enthusiasms. And the only remit they had was, you can do anything you like, but it can't cost the department any more money. And the staff were fantastic at coming up with that. We use what we call the Groundhog Day principle. Do you know the guy? Oh, 5 minutes. Groundhog Day principle. He, Punxsutawney Phil, is a weatherman who goes off. He's horrible to everybody because he goes off and has to go and see this gopher predicting the weather. And he's nasty to everybody. He goes to bed and he thinks, fantastic, that's the end of that day. I've got it out of the way. But he wakes up and he has to keep reliving the day again and again. And basically halfway through the film, somebody says to him, I peg you as a glasses half empty kind of guy. And from that point, he realizes the day's gone, and he makes the best of it. And that's what we did on this project. We said, we're not going to beat up staff. We're not going to beat up. We don't look at deficits in service users, but we don't look at deficits in our social workers. We don't look at deficits in domiciliary care, although there's loads, or in care homes. But we look at the good things that are going on. And there's this whole area of work around appreciative inquiry, which we used. And we applied, and this is funny, isn't it? The social model of disability, which we preach all the time, we started to apply it to our staff before we thought about the service users, really. Because it's easy, isn't it, to blame social workers, and it's easy to blame domiciliary care workers and people who work in care homes. But actually, we need to look at the damage that's caused by all of these things. The fact that we do rely on forms, IT, and all the managerialist approach, that we have this purchaser-provider divide, what's all that about? The target-driven and time-consuming performance management, tick-box regulation and inspection, a culture of blame and risk aversion, and underfunding and poor working conditions of some of the frontline staff. We found on this project, when we got with long-term home care, isn't it? It's a horrible service. It's all set times, set tasks, all supposed to be squeezed into 15, 30, 45-minute slots, whatever. We freed all that up. We kept the same envelope of resource for a four-week period, but basically with the social workers, with the providers, determined outcomes, and then let the providers get on with it. We didn't give them a prescriptive care plan, but we gave them clear brief on outcomes, and we gave them a clear envelope of resource they could use, and they came up with some fantastic stuff, and the staff felt really good about what they'd done at the end of the project. strategy after designated strategy. In Wales, we've got this terrible thing. The poor staff working in mental health have to do the unified assessment whenever they have to use commission our resources, and yet they've got the care programme approach, and somehow they've got form after form they're having to fill in. Who are the champions of transformation? And I'm sure it's the staff, isn't it, really? And there are two quotes here. Parker, who does a lot of work, and Glazeby, a lot of work on health. We argue investment reorganisations better spent on supporting the workforce to move from being policy victims to policy entrepreneurs. And this is from Wales. 85% of innovative ideas that actually work come from the frontline staff. It's not surprising, is it? And the guy who's proved this is Jeff Walker, who runs the Sandwell Community Caring Trust, and he features in the Sunday Times top 10 small companies to work for. Staff love him, 1 minute, 3 minutes. This is another hero in Wales. We've got Paul Thomas, Ban the Boss. He did a programme on BBC, worked with the bin men in Blaenau Gwent, who were micromanaged to death by the council. Loads of managers, right from the top down. They got rid of all these higher managers who were sort of really lost touch with reality. And he worked with the front line and improved efficiency. They were going to invest in this fantastic GPS system to devise the best routes for the bin men to drive around. But actually, when they talked to the bin men said, well, that won't work because there's a school run at that time, or that's actually on a hill like this, and it means we can't lift the bins into the... It states the obvious, but work with your front line. And again, leadership, not management. Don't manage your staff, lead your staff, inspire them, because they're going to be the ones that are going to come up with the solutions. And also, recognise the interdependence of people. Yeah, we don't, particularly in Wales, like the consumerist approach that you seem to is sometimes seen the emphasis in England. You know, it's that interdependence. And we use a thing called the census framework, and I'll pretty finish on this quickly. And all of our staff, from the frontline home care staff to social workers, have latched onto this. That what we want to do is create an enriched environment of support. And really, all the individual budget stuff and that, and it's interesting, Sam says that's a keystone, but we think fundamental keystone is getting the environment right first. Create that enriched environment. And the census framework, Mike Nolan's professor of older people's nursing in Sheffield, and again, there's the references to this after the event, is that everybody, now it doesn't matter whether you're a service user, a carer, or a member of staff, should have a sense of security, continuity, belonging, purpose, achievement, and significance. When we took this to our staff and said, what's your sense of significance that you matter to the department? Listen, nobody's ever asked us that before, but when you start asking these questions to your staff, what's your sense of purpose when you come into work today? Yeah, they say, oh, I didn't think, you know, you just give me tasks and I go off and do them. This is fundamental, we think, and in the project, this was the cornerstone for us. Is that, I can't really say, is that 2 minutes? 1 minute? Seconds? No. This sums it all up in a nutshell. Sure, glad the hole isn't at our end, isn't it? So who's that? Is that social workers? Is that home care workers? Or is that sort of senior managers in social services and that's frontline social workers? You've got, the boat's going to sink unless we look after everybody in the system. And just pointing to you to go and have a look. In terms of outcome-based planning, there's nothing we find better than the stuff that's been done at the Scottish Centre for Community Development, LEAP. It's action learning sort of approach. What difference are you trying to make? How will you know you've made it? Then get on and design your stuff. And we spent ages on the Altogether Now project getting those first two steps thought through. You can dive in and change your systems, but do collectively find out what you're trying to achieve and get people to put some flesh on. What does that look like? What does it look, sound, and feel like? What might it look like? And then do the stuff. And that's we found that, again, was a fundamentally important thing, that getting everybody to a common language, and that meant we had older people, we had carers, we had staff, and we came up with a set of outcomes. And then we said, well, what would that look like? And once we got that, we were off then. We got a common hymn sheet to work to. And I can't overemphasize the importance of getting that common hymn sheet first, because you find personalization means a million different things to different people. And all I say is that's the end results, really, was that we found, basically, we got better outcomes, staff were happier, we used everyone's time a lot more effectively, we could see it, we could make efficiency savings in all this, we used a lot of low-cost, no-cost, because we involved the community, and we didn't forget people living in care homes, and actually social workers and frontline staff can be brilliant. And that's it, really. Yeah. So don't put all your eggs in the RAS basket. That's all. I suppose that's my only plea, really. It's an important thing. It's interesting to hear that. But I'd say don't. You know, make sure you get your environment right first. Okay. Is that okay?
Thank you, Nick.